7 o'clock. Let's call this meeting to order, please. Everyone, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Pope.
Here.
Pelosima.
Present.
Clocher.
Here.
Milchewski.
Here.
Frieders.
Here.
Falkhazer.
Here.
Tarulis.
Here.
Hernandez. The quorum is established.
All right. Do we have any amendments to tonight's agenda? Yes, sir.
I'd like to poll number 12.
12 from the consent agenda?
Yes, sir.
That's a big consent agenda. And 12 will go under Public Works. Any other?
I'd like to pull number 9.
Number 9 will also go to Public Works. Anything else?
Well, if he's pulling number 9, Mr. Mayor, we've got to pull the other number 11, which is also the pathway.
Is this revenge?
See that? See that? I almost stopped by it. 9 and 11.
9, 11, 12.
Oh, that's what happens. You make the consent agenda 58 items.
Any other amendments to the agenda? All those in favor of amending the agenda as presented, please state aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next, we do have some presentations, some good presentations. We'll start in with swearing in of patrol officer, Robert J. Harris III. Mr. Harris, please come forward.
No, how are you? Good. Please raise your right arm and repeat after me. I state your name.
I'm Robert Harris.
Having been appointed to the office of patrol officer.
Having been appointed to the office of patrol officer.
In the United City of Yorkville.
In the United City of Yorkville.
In the County of Kendall, aforesaid.
In the County of Kendall, aforesaid.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties.
Of the Office of Patrol Officer.
Of the Office of Patrol Officer.
Of the United City of Yorkville Police Department.
Of the United City of Yorkville Police Department.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you.
And, see, Bob, I would like you to stay up here. Do you have any family? Do you have any pictures? Yeah, come bring them up. Come bring them up for a picture. Get a picture of everybody. That's your dad.
Given by the Association for Outstanding Service to the goals and principles of the State Association. So
okay.
It was very humbling and surprising.
Nice. Well, I'd like to embarrass you a little bit and go over all of your accomplishments for the city. So that's quite a bit. So Bob Johnson spent countless hours giving back to the Yorkville community through his many years of public service. Bob was born at the position of Ward 4 Alderman in September of 1992 and held that position until 1995. From 1995 to 1999, he served as the mayor of Yorkville. After serving on the city council, Bob has continued his public service by serving as the chairman of Yorkville's Board of Fire and Police Commission since its inception in 2001. Bob was instrumental in setting up the regulations for the Fire and Police Commission and continues to serve as chairman today, dedicating many hours each year to the commission. He has also been actively involved in the Illinois Fire and Police Commissioners Association. He has served in leadership positions within the state organization, including serving as president. The Doc Wilson Award is given annually by the Illinois Fire and Police Commissioners Association to recognize persons who promote the cause of fire and police commissioners within the state of Illinois. So, Bob, we would like to present you this little memento of our gratitude.
I was just talking to Russ over here, though. I actually started out in 1990. I was on the library board.
Really?
Before I became an alderman, so.
Huh.
It's been about 26 years now. So.
Very nice.
It was good to see Russ.
Well, we'll make sure
to start. Right.
We'll add that to the bio.
Yeah, that's all right.
But Bob, the Mayor and City Council of the United City of Yorkville presents a certificate to you for being awarded the Doc Wilson Award by the Illinois Fire and Police Commissioners Association. We commend you for volunteering your time and for your dedication and commitment to the Illinois Fire and Police Commissioners Association and to the United City of Yorkville's Board of Fire and Police Commissioners. Congratulations, presented this 28th day of November 2017.
Thank you,
sir.
Second surprise I've gotten this month, and I'm very humble and very grateful. And 26 years I've been associated with the city, it's been a labor of love, so it's very hard, very easy to do those things when you feel that committed to it. I do want to recognize my wife, Karen, sitting in the back.
So thank you very much. Okay, what else this evening? We have, we're once again recognizing individuals for their years of service with the city. So we have several accommodations we'd like to give out. The first would be Pete Rados from our building code official. So if Ms. Barksdale Noble would come forward and Mr. Rados.
You can stand there while we flatter you.
All right. Pete's our building code official. He's been our building code official since January of 2012. Since that time, almost six years, he has conducted over 500 residential building permit plan reviews and inspections. Those inspections range from electrical to plumbing to mechanical. And in addition to the 500 single-family residential, he's done over thousands of commercial and residential small miscellaneous permits. He's done those in a timely manner with significant success, no outsourcing, very limited, and without incident. He also serves as an interim inspector for the Kendall County as part of an intergovernment agreement. So he'll do inspections for Kendall County, the mayor's building code officials on vacation, and vice versa. He's done that for 4 years. With the background in building trades, he's a licensed plumber, and he currently holds 5 certifications from the International Code Council. He is currently a supervisor of a staff of 2 full-time employees and 1 part-time in the Building Safety and Zoning Division of the Community Development Department. And Pete, we thank you for your 5 years of service and dedication to the city, and we appreciate and value your efforts.
Thanks, sir. So we have a certificate of recognition from the Mayor and City Council of the United City of Yorkville. We present this certificate to Peter Rados. We're grateful for your appreciation for your 5 years of service and dedication to the United City of Yorkville from 2012 through 2017. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You've been a great addition.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Next on our list, I believe, is Tom Conan, presented by Mr. Eric Deuce.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tom actually came to us 5 years ago from the village of Oswego. Prior to that, he had been with a private engineering firm as a construction inspector, correct? And before that, he had a very long career at Village of North Aurora. Tom is our Class A water operator and our head water operator in charge, correct? Responsible operator, I believe, is the title. What that does is that means that he is a point of contact for the EPA, federal, and the IEPA as well, for water quality issues, water main installation, and making sure that things are, we are following the rules correctly. Tom actually is also responsible for helping produce 2 million gallons of water a day for our residents. He makes sure that the chlorine residuals are right, the fluoride is right, and that it's fresh water that we get for our residents every day. I want to say thank you very much for your 5 years of service, and hopefully there's many more.
Thank you.
Shay Remus, if you would come forward, please, along with Mr. Evans.
Your show.
Yeah, your show. Shay here is our superintendent of recreation. She oversees all of our recreation programming, special events, athletics, preschool, child development. Kind of a quick background on her. She graduated from Winona State University in 2007. Shortly after graduation, she came and did an internship with us. During an internship, we instantly knew Shane was going to be a great employee, and a star in the field of Parks and Recreation. And so we were very fortunate that we had a position open up shortly afterwards. And not only did we convince her to apply for the position, but convince her to take the position. She's been with us for the last 10 years, where she's held not only as recreation coordinator, she was a recreation manager, and then her current position is superintendent of recreation. In addition to her duties here with the city, she's also heavily involved with two of our professional organizations. We have our National Parks and Recreation Association, which she's a member and a certified parks and recreation professional. And in addition to our state, Illinois State Parks and Recreation Association, where now she's a member, but she's a graduate of the Professional Development School, which is a 2-year management program. During her time there, which we know with her duties here, she did very well there. They asked her to be a regent, which she was for the last couple years, and just recently was nominated and selected as the chairman of the school, which is exciting for her as well as for the department. She is the wife of Matt, who is here. Mother to Lainey and her newborn Violet, which her and I get to complain about each of our newborns over here for the last few months. Not only has it been an honor working with Shay, she's an outstanding employee and a great asset to the city, but she's a better person. And that comes out in everything she does every single day, and it shows with our staff, and it shows with all the people she works here with the city. So it's an honor to be standing here with you, working with you the last 10 years, and hopefully 10 more, either here or somewhere else together. So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now, I just want to echo Tim's words. I mean, I started on the park board with the city, and all that time said, I've heard nothing but compliments. And everyone appreciates the work you do, especially me. So, in grateful appreciation for your 10 years of service, dedicated service, the United City of Yorkville, Shay Remus, 2007 to 2017. Yes.
Come up.
Yes. Who's the Lainey and Violet? Bring them both. Your bio here. I'd just like to say Then you make my job easy. I mean, I enjoyed your service to the city, and I always know that the residents are in good hands. I think we have a top-notch, four second to none, well-trained, and well-respected. And I know that's in no small part due to your leadership. Rich has joined the department as a sworn patrol officer in 1992. He was sworn in as chief in 2010. He came in highly qualified, having experience as a member of the U.S. Army Military Police Airborne Division, as well as already being a member of the Kendall County Special Response Team and working as a sheriff's deputy here in Kendall County. He remains a Kendall County Special Response Team member since 1991. With the Yorkville PD, Chief Hart moved up the ranks from officer to chief. During that time, he worked in many capacities. In 2000, he became a school resource officer, juvenile detective. In 2001, a range master firearms instructor, a team leader of the ILEAS Weapons of Mass Destruction Team, and holds many certifications and specialized training certificates. He is a former president of the Kendall County Chiefs Association. He graduated from the Northwestern University Staff and Command Class 194 in 2004. He assisted with the cleanup operation of Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and attended the FBI National Academy Class Session 248 in Quantico, Virginia. He graduated in 2012. So thank you again, Chief, for your 25 years of service and dedication to the city. We really appreciate and value your efforts. And we would like to present you with, just like Shay's only bigger. So, a grateful appreciation for your 25 years of service. Thank you, Rich. So, tell us a little bit. I mean, you've seen this town from its infancy.
Yeah, it's been a great 25 years. I was reflecting back on that a little bit today, the changes that the city's gone through from, I want to say there were probably 9 police officers when I retired full time. And it's changed immensely, but the changes that have come through the department wouldn't have happened without the mayor and council and previous mayors and councils. Just thank you for all the support and direction you've given us over the years. And we've got the luxury in New York that we have a lot of police officers from other jurisdictions live in our town. A lot of them refer to it as Top. And the reason why they live here is because of that support that we get. I got to thank my wife. It's also our 25th anniversary this year. So she has put up with me for all these years. and lastly, probably the officers and the employees of the department. They do an incredible job. They make me look good. They make you look good. And their dedication is just, it's incredible. I come into work every day, and it's great to work in my hometown. It's been my dream. So thank you.
Nice. How long was Harold chief?
Harold was a chief for 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, he was the department, I believe, 31 years when he left.
I know he was well loved. You had big shoes to fill.
Oh, yeah.
You filled them quite well. Do you want to bring your wife up for a picture? Do you want to come up for a picture?
Behind every good officer.
Citizen comments on items that are on the agenda this evening.
Yes.
Please step forward, state your name for the record, and sign in, please.
My name is Jason Hedman. I live at
and I want to thank Mayor Galinsky for the opportunity. In the City Council's last meeting regarding the 2018 levy, I'm concerned as to how our library and its board is being represented. Since the start of our director search, I've been closely following news articles, council meetings, records, and reports to the board. Overall, what's being said does not seem to match up with what the discussions that the library board is having. I also don't feel we've done a great job communicating our needs and reaching out to all of you to help understand the issues we face. The cost reductions that have been implemented and the feedback we're getting from the public. At the same time, I feel there's a lot of information flowing between you all with regards to the library, without much participation or interaction with the library. I ask all of you who sit before me, how well do you know the library and its budget? What's the bar that's being used to determine the library's need? It was stated in the last City Council meeting with regards to the 2018 levy that the board is like a son that wants extra expensive new iPhone and doesn't have the money. I'm not here today to ask all my moms and dads for money. What we want is our library staff to not have to climb a ladder outside to flip the main breaker on the chiller because we can't afford preventative maintenance on the equipment that keeps the air conditioning up. What we want is our staff to feel valued and not being repeatedly told that they should be replaced or cut. What we want is to be able to meet the public's need for being open and have basic services available for all to utilize it and have a sustainable plan for our future. We have listened to, and would like to continue listening to, all the cost-saving suggestions from the city, but it's time to clear the air. You're right, the library board and the community members that came to speak to the board felt strongly that we should have an educated librarian to lead our library as our director, and that's the path we've taken. This should not be a surprise, as our police department is led by a police chief, our schools employ teachers, and I'm pretty sure our community pharmacies are ran by pharmacists. Why shouldn't our library have a trained librarian as its head? This is a decision that we made in the interest of the body that we are entrusted to guide, and it's time for us to move past this. We can be budget conscious and have a library director on staff. They are not mutually exclusive, and I feel, in fact, that it's the opposite. Our new director is already active in the community and engaging with local businesses to support our library and try and update our collection without spending taxpayer money. I believe Ms. Topper is even working as a guest bartender Thursday night at one of the local pubs to raise money for new books. She's also seeking grant money to help improve our children's science programming, again, without dipping into city funds. She's negotiated lower rates with our elevator vendor and our primary research database vendor all in her first few weeks on the job. These are all part of the key role that she plays and a direct result of her previous experience in good financial stewardship of public life. It was brought to the City Council meeting, last meeting, that we're all on the same team and we need to come and sit together to get this fixed. I'm here. I'm not sitting. But on behalf of the Library Board, challenge accepted. When we listened to the Parks and Rec proposal, I sat on the Library Board meeting and looked directly at Bart and Tim and suggested that we table other suggestions until we have a director hired that can gauge the impact of these decisions. I can freely speak for the entire board that I say we haven't felt the spirit of cooperation with the city since that conversation. Let's have those conversations directly and stop passing notes. While I'm personally not in support of seeking a referendum to add any new tax levies for the library, I'm also not in support of any means to further reduce our staffing, given that one of the largest complaints we get is the library is not open enough. We've previously reduced our funds to buy books, some years not even spending funds to buy books. We've cut our staff, we've scaled back our hours, and refroze staff salaries for 5 years. What we're left with is a wonderful building that we can't afford to maintain. We have a budget problem to solve, and I'm confident that the people in this room, along with the library, have the means to solve it while keeping our staff whole, our building maintained, and our city served in a fiscally responsible manner. All right, so here's the interactive part. I ask all of you today, by an unofficial show of hands, as our elected officials, who among you truly supports having a financially stable and well-utilized library in our community?
I'm sorry, it's a citizen comment section.
Understood.
Thank you.
Who's ready to start understanding its programs and budget? Who's ready to support it by truly diving in and developing a thought-out, sustainable recommendation to both the City Library Board and the City Council? We all know we can cut staff to save money and increase our tax levy to balance our budget, but these are easy answers to toss around that are only skin deep without fully understanding the intricacies of how these decisions impact taxpayers and library operations. I'd love to be able to stand in front of all of you and justify our 2018 levy request. We have neither the time nor the mutual framework to have a conversation at this point. However, with the Mayor and City Council's approval, I'd like to recommend a joint committee of two representatives from both the Library Board and the City Council and our Library Director to start the process of developing recommendations to both the City and the Library Board for the next budget cycle and levy. I know that doing this falls outside the scope of the levy discussion, but I hope we can revisit this topic next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody have citizen comments on items that are on the agenda this evening? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Polisina?
Aye.
Milczewski?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Plocher?
Aye.
Motion passes.
I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the regular City Council meeting of October 24th, 2017, as presented.
So moved. Second.
Comments, questions, or corrections on the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, under Mayor's report, there's a proclamation somewhere in this 1,000-page packet. I'd like to make a proclamation for Illinois Bicentennial. If you'd like to read it, it's somewhere in the packet. Next, we'll move on to tax levy. I'll entertain a motion to approve a resolution requesting separate limiting rates for all city funds and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved.
Second.
Comments, questions? Roll call, please.
Ritters?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Milczewski?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Aye.
Motion passes.
I'll entertain a motion to approve an ordinance for the levy assessment of taxes for the fiscal year beginning on May 1, 2018 and ending on April 30th, 2019. Authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
So moved. Second.
Comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Colosimo?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Milczewski?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Motion passes.
I found the Illinois Bicentennial Proclamation. Would anyone like to hear it?
Available at Illinois200.com.
So Illinois200.com, there you go. Okay, now the next item under Mayor's report is just an update and a conversation on the TIF 1, TIF 2 process. Bart attended the Campbell County Board, Finance Committee, and Committee of the Whole meeting. I think you're going to update us on that a little bit, or?
Yeah, I've sent everybody emails on the outcome of the vote for the meeting. It was 4 yes, 3 no's, 1 abstention, and 1 present vote. Counties are unique, separate from municipalities, in that the majority of their business can be conducted with a less than majority vote. So if 7 out of 10 county board members show up on something, they can vote for 3 on something and have it be approved, whereas most of our ordinances that we vote on have to be a simple majority of everybody that's on the board. case law and then also state law. So procedurally, anytime something gets voted down, there can be a motion to reconsider by somebody who's on the prevailing side. Thank you. And so that leaves us to the mercy of the four county board members who either voted to abstain or voted no, and maybe the one individual who voted present. That's something that the city attorney and the assistant state's attorney who runs the county board meetings are looking into to see if we can appeal to them. At this point, all the other taxing entities have been receptive to our request. We've received one letter, one acknowledgement that the letter is basically in the mail without attending to go to the meetings, and then two favorable responses from the county board, which was a split vote, obviously. So at a staff level, we still think that the formation of the second TIF district, the extension of the first district, is the best option for all the taxing entities. Including ours, the best way to make downtown redevelopment in a timely manner. It's not fully dead on our end if there was a motion to reconsider and then an approval at a later date. And we're also looking at a couple other things with the actual TIF extension. Maybe they can get a letter of neutrality or something. So we're kind of in uncharted territory there, but it's something that we're looking at. And so the request. To the county board members who voted against it would be to simply just motion to reconsider it, approve that motion at a future meeting, has to be in the next meeting actually, so that's next Tuesday, December 5th. Table it at that point. You know, they don't need to re-vote on the actual main motion at this point. And we can see if there's a way that we can alleviate some concerns or address some issues that some of the county board members had. In preparation for a potential future vote. And if that doesn't happen, then we're back to the drawing board, either proceeding forward, maybe without their letter of support to the state and see if they'll take it, or redrawing our TIF boundaries and conserving again at the city level. So I'm optimistic that I think if we can get all the other four taxing entities on board, that might look, or it will look a lot better to some of the county board members. And maybe that's a little bit of a remedy. So, you know, I think that's everything strategy-wise for the TIF 1 and TIF 2 discussion, but really I wanted to just make sure that everybody is still okay with that, and we could scrap the process now, redraw boundaries, look at different things, if everybody wanted to, but this is a little bit of a hurdle that we need to clear in the next you know, several weeks.
And there was no discussion when they voted on it, correct?
Correct, and I was permitted to speak at the board meeting during the agenda item and said I understood that three of the board members had previously spoken out against it, but there were, you know, I expected a couple positive votes. I didn't know how it was going to go. If everybody wanted to talk about it, you know, I'd be willing to list the concerns and bring it back in the future meeting. They would just table it at that point, and then they all just kind of looked at each other and voted on it right away.
Okay. And we would have to proceed because my understanding is, what we want to do is reconfigure, extend of one and reconfigure portions of it, which are underwater in the British Temple, I think. And that the legislature is considering new amendments to the TIF. They're supposed to receive a report from a task force on April 1st, which would enable them to revise the TIF Act before the end of the assembly year, which would be May. So, whereas we realize that we have time on it, we'd like to do the best plan for the city in terms of TIF 2 versus TIF 1, and to do one without the other does not permit us to plan the overall downtown development as well as we could if we had the same term for all property.
Can we get left?
Yeah, I think that they would do that.
That's all I would say.
Without an issue.
So the state can interpret that however the state will, and I would like to.
Yeah.
And since the voting of the county is unique to the county, to county entities, having a totally different result than we have here based on state law, maybe if we
could. Yeah, we thought that the merits too of, you know, usually school boards across the state are the ones that object first. In this case, if we manage to actually favorable to us.
couple things from the consent agenda.
Could we start with the three that we pulled first?
Well, how are we going to do it?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. All right, I need a motion for an authorization number 3 on the Kennedy Road shared use path and authorize the city administrator to execute.
Second.
Comments or questions on that? Roll call, please.
Who seconded, please?
I did.
Thank you. Frieders?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Nay.
Nay. Pelosima?
Nay.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Milschewski?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Bocher?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right, I need a motion to authorize the Kendall County TAP grant application and authorize staff to apply for right-of-way and or easement acquisition for the 2018 KC TAP grant program for the Fox Road Shared Use Path Project.
Second.
Comments or questions on that one? Roll call, please.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Pelosima?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Milschewski?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Bocher?
Aye.
Frieders?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right. Number 12. The approval of an ordinance amending the code of ordinances regulating on-street parking for Mill Street and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Second.
Reason I called today is something more clarification. We're cleaning up the language for the Walmart to remove the on pavement, the parking restriction. Our ordinance stipulates that you have to be, or you have to park on a paved area exclusive of the area between the curb and the cycle. Correct. I just want to clarify if this creates any other problems with enforcement. We have areas that don't have curbs, do have sidewalks. So I just want to make sure that the intent is to not have people parking in the grass areas if there is a curb and sidewalk. So if there's no curb, somebody legitimately could park there.
You're not allowed to park on forest surfaces, so grass, even gravel, in certain areas. If it's pavement, for some reason that might be okay. I don't believe that along that stretch there are any.
However, we have a dozen streets in the downtown areas that have gravel side areas that are frequently parked. We have areas that are grass that are parked. This comes down to enforcement and interpretation of our ordinances. If we're saying it has to be a paved area and you can't park between the sidewalk and curb, this creates kind of a handbag of potential problems. I know we've not had issues other than isolated areas.
About that. Parking on like the gravel shoulder is okay as long as there's not a no parking sign. Okay. So I explain that correctly.
And I get that. But if there's an 8-foot wide gravel area between the sidewalk and the road,
It's not defined as okay. grass necessarily. Well, the intent is to have a parkway in a grass area, but that's not the case in over 70,000. So, I don't have an issue with what we're doing. It raises some potential issues. I don't know how we clarify it because we're always going to have these areas that are not going to go away for sites report.
Sure, and that may be an issue that we have to address from an enforcement perspective and then bring something back if there's a clarification. We were just trying to eliminate the confusion on Mill Street with the odd language on the sign.
Typically, government makes one problem for it.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Roll call, please.
Belosima?
Aye.
Von Kessler?
Aye.
Nashewski?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Flocher?
Aye.
Freeters?
Aye.
Chirulis?
Aye.
All right. I make a motion to approve a resolution authorizing application for the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program and execution of all necessary documents for the Fox Road Shared Use Path. To approve a resolution authorizing application for the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program and execution of all necessary documents for the ComEd Shared Use Path. And to approve a resolution authorizing application for the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program and execution of all necessary documents, downtown Hill Streetscaping, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Gentlemen, two questions.
Can't go another step.
It's one bunch of applications.
Just vote no.
Done with it.
All right. Another comment or questions? Yes, sir.
I have a quickie. I think all three of them are kind of cool. I know that we don't have any money lined up for any of those items, but as most of us have learned, if you don't ask for it, you won't get it, and nothing's going to happen anyway. So while they're all long shots, I think they all have individual sets of merit that are kind of cool. And being one of the, being young enough to have children that run away from me in a bunch of random park locations because they're my children and they like to upset me, I think two out of these three would be very, very, very cool. Just as far as how our other county maintained parks are. In addition to all the parks that we have in town, I think it's further things to kind of toot our horn as a place. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yes, sir.
I believe also at the meeting we talked about if for some reason you can't find the funding for these things, it's not like regular stone cap thing. So here you can take care
of it. Roll call, please.
Von Kessler?
Aye.
Nashewski?
Aye.
Hernandez?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Flocher?
Aye.
Freeters?
Aye.
Chirulis?
Aye.
Belosima?
Aye.
All right, I make a motion to approve an ordinance amending the traffic schedule and index at the intersection of Houston Street and Van Emmon Street and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Is there a second?
Second.
Comments or questions? Julie, you might want to pay attention for this one. Jay, would you like to lead the conversation?
Oh, sure. One of the statements was
in the first part from the engineering was that people are confused on that end. What's so confusing? Stop sign. Cause traffic does not stop. That's what I'm really thinking about as a neighbor referendum. Because everybody, I mean, I have people at school and everyone's, you know, been in there. It's just a bad construction. But from what I've told people, more people are in favor of more like you. That way everybody has an expectation we're all supposed to stop.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I kind of support four-way also, and my kind of reason is a little different as far as that's kind of a main road to downtown. If we're going to try to get more people to come in restaurants and use the parks and stuff, it might be a good idea to have people stop there. Maybe it might help them do something to use that area. So that's kind of the reason I was supporting.
John?
I mean, I've experienced it too. Like that. Said nothing for years and years and years. That one night she said something and her husband said it, and I gone, I agree with you, but the one problem is you're gonna get through next year that you cannot stop there. Because it's too big of a incline. It's just you can't. So you're gonna blow up the stop sign and they're gonna hit you.
Yep.
I think it needs to stay as a two-way the way it is. But we need to do something with cleaning up the line of sight. that would be particularly the northeast corner of the intersection where we have some overgrown vegetation and other obstructions on the corner. I think that's very that would be very helpful. But it comes in our way. If you're coming down the hill, you're not going to stop. Lines of sight on 4. Check this spot. It's a stop sign. It says cross traffic does not stop. If you can't follow that and you get hit, I think, come on, people, this is stupidity at its best here. The signs are there. The signs report. People are just not being, they're not obeying the law. They're not following the traffic controls. This is not an issue of the need for more signage. This is an issue of people actually paying what the signs are there and us actually making sure that this intersection is safe. Down the hill, that was good stuff. They're going to slide right through. And we already have expectations that people go through that intersection or south. Changing them, switching from one to another, it doesn't work. Maybe a round.
Yeah, I mean, I understand how traffic studies work, but they do basically the vehicle counts is kind of one of the primary. And obviously, there's more traffic on. There is on Houston. So I said that Houston should stop Van Ammon, but I don't think traffic studies take into consideration the pitch of the road and that several days a year cars are going to go through the intersection whether they like it or not. It's happened to me. I think it's happened to everybody. And even some of the lesser roads that aren't as pitchy, it's happened to me. I'm about over by the old courthouse, going down that hill. I've gone, thank God there was no train. And I couldn't stop me that happened. I think the worst option is flipping the signs. Because Van Ammon, those people are just gonna go. They're not gonna be slow down. If somebody's getting the T-bone, it's going to happen. So I think the traffic study option is by far the worst option of flipping the signs. I like the idea of keeping it the way it is, or I would be okay with a four-way stop at least. And then if it's stopping and somebody slips and slides down through the stop sign, at least then I'm going to stop. It shouldn't be that bad of a crash. So I would be okay with either one of those options, but I would not be okay with flipping it because the eventual T-bone is coming.
Pretty much is a four-way stop. Or do you get Joel and Joel? We're together.
I'm under.
Pretty much is a four-way stop. Anybody that lives in that neighborhood stops there because they go over that sign all the time. Yeah.
brought up.
We don't think that it will improve or will prevent crashes at the time, so it's that's not going to a better outcome. It doesn't change the main issue we see from the accident data of the orientation of the stop signs. So, I mean, possible it could work, and I've tried to phrase this in two different ways to improve it. There's preventing accidents, and then limiting the city's liability for the accidents, too. So any of the solutions could possibly prevent accidents. You know, we know everything after you study it. But based on history, we make a recommendation, and then the recommendations help limit your liability post-accidents. So that's what we, you know, we've looked at. So, I mean, everybody says the best way to do this is to keep it as it is, and put up a blinking.
Alleviates all of those issues because that person now who hit the stop sign, want to hit this stop sign, because it'll be on Houston's. So, like, I see it from both sides, but in my opinion, if you want to see something change, you trust what the experts say and attempt it. Especially now that we're going into winter. I'm not asking for a, you know, for a death match, but from my perspective, you see an issue, and we've talked about this a dozen times off the record. Now it's on. We had, you know, EEI go out there and make a recommendation. And every time, I think I have like a 99% record. Every time I say, hey, they want a stop sign there, the answer is always no. The only time I've ever seen a stop sign get added was at John, right? John and Cannonball. And that's, it's like 5 years of me going, hey, they need a stop sign. Hey, they need a stop sign. The answer is always no. Here, this is the first time it's ever been switching, because you always lean towards the road with more traffic. So I'm like, while I understand your concerns, and yeah, there could be a T-bone, but there's already been 12. And we don't know if those are caused by the stop sign or not. We don't know if they were 100% caused by the weather or not. But again, we want something to change and to improve. We have a suggestion from a group of professionals, and we have a guideline from the MUTCD that says this is how you do it. It's mandated by the federal government, which doesn't really say much to me right now, but at the same time, they are the professionals, and that's what they do. I think we owe it to ourselves to at least think, what would it be like if it existed like this, outside of the idea that, oh, it's going to happen because if we switch it, that's just what's going to happen. So those are my 3 cents.
Julie, what's your opinion?
Based on what we have to study, and it's generally, as you can see, that what they call the right-of-way law usually means the local road refers to the major road, which has more traffic on it. So I think the confusion with the drivers is that when they're on the head, they stop.
Studies are very easily done,
hey, this resident wants that intersection looked at for a stop sign. We proceed with evaluating traffic counts, sight lines, and everything involved with a stop sign. We give residents the luxury of having a full, okay, your concerns are important to us. Let's look at it comprehensively, and they do that. When an alderwoman does the same thing, I would assume that we would follow the same protocol. So from my perspective, I had the same conversation. Well, if blinkers aren't going to work, what's the deal with the intersection? It was the same evaluation they performed at John and Cannonball, which now has a stop sign. So from my perspective, this is almost a necessary aspect when you're considering changing a configuration that has been planned or in the same state it's been in, either since the dawn of its creation or in recent memory. So from my perspective, this is more helpful than saying, let's just buy the blinkies. Because in my opinion, if the professionals that sit there that we pay don't think the blinkers are going to do anything because of how wide Van Emmon is, that signs are gargantuan. You've seen it. So if we know that that intersection is a special case, just like Cannonball and John was, we owe it to ourselves, our residents, and our car insurance to allow the professionals to evaluate that very intersection for sight lines, traffic, and the number of counts. That's just my perspective on why they proceeded with actually analyzing it as opposed to just saying, okay, here's your blinking lights.
And I completely understand the logic of go ahead and proceed that. Yes, we do allow traffic studies to be done throughout. Typically, if somebody comes in and we just studied something, you know, a year or two ago, we're not going to study. We're going to tell them that we studied it prior. We didn't. This one hadn't been studied in quite a while. But I think it would have afforded us a quick discussion of do we want to proceed with that. I don't think that question was asked. I mean, most of the times it's asked, can we put it on the agenda for a study? And I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it. Just understand, didn't feel that problem. Because every time we do a study, it's an engineering cost. You know, it's $5,000 every single time we do one of these. So they do get expensive. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to do this. I'm just questioning the process on this. That's it.
Jackie?
I just disagree with you in the respect that there was a stop sign there. I didn't ask for anything. I didn't ask for anything to be changed in the traffic control of that. When you have somebody come in and you don't have anything there, I understand the study. But this one, this has been there. I left my house over 19 years. That's how it's been. Rich has been here out of years. That's how it's been. So it wasn't that I was asking for anything new. I was just trying to make it. It's bad sight lines. It's dark there. We turn it, it's not lit at night very well. Part of the problem is people coming into town have to go because there is a piece of property there that really needs to be cleaned up, and they have to get so far into the intersection. That's why people slow down to hustle around these days, is because you don't know if they're going to go through the intersection or are they just going into the intersection so they can see across the track. So, I wasn't asking for anything new to be placed there. I was just trying to college.
Okay. Well, from a precedent standpoint, we had something in Bristol Bay where I was receiving emails and being called things that even I, in my creative imagination, have never been called before because of the supposed neglect on the behalf of the city because of issues in and around the school area. Because we didn't have enough signs. We needed signs. We needed rumble strips. What were the wacky things? What are they called?
Flexible
delineators. We needed all these things, and this was at the demand of a resident who said, we needed this, we need more. Well, they did like three different, exactly what they did here. They did it three times, and that's over emails. And this person was completely way off base and didn't understand that, yeah, it's busy around the school. But this is the same exact situation, but from a much clearer perspective that, no, we don't have any historical data on accidents. If something needs to be done, and we're talking about spending $5,000 to $15,000 on blinkies, if you spend $4,000 and realize, no, it's fine the way it is, we just need to enforce it better. I mean, in my opinion, you can't make a decision without information. And what they did was they gathered information, which give us a picture of what it is in reality. Because I'm having a hard time differentiating between whether we believe something because it's true because of fact, or we believe it just because that's how we feel. So in this instance, we have data. We have actual information that tells us this many cars go this direction, this many cars go that direction. And there's an even amount of accidents on both sides. But if you're still concerned about it, let's address it. So they have all of the information so that we can make a tangible decision, something that we can actually do something with. So if we don't agree with it, that's perfectly fine. But to now negate the need for a discussion about the needs of that particular intersection, I think is a little bit off base. We're talking about, do we need the stop sign? not did we need to investigate it further? In my opinion, that's how you make a proper decision. If we decide not to move forward with flipping the stop signs, we've made a decision using all the information at our disposal. If we don't purchase the flip or the blinkies because of not doing the study, that also is an incorrect way to make a decision. You need to have information to make a good decision. And I think here we have a whole bunch of information, a whole bunch of differing opinions. This is going to be a decision based on fact with a little bit of feeling thrown in. So from my perspective, we needed that analysis in order to make an intelligent decision.
Question for Kathy. How often do municipalities designate their traffic schedules to professional staff versus having to vote on city council? Are you aware? That'd be something just in an effort to kind of move along with the conversation, too. Just to, you know, we've had a fair amount of process issues brought up and settled in the past 10 years. And in my mind, this is kind of one of them, keeping it concise.
Now, this situation is kind of unique in the fact that we have the two aldermen from that ward live on that street.
I really have spent time looking at the accidents that were there. I think it's subject to interpretation.
Did you and Joe agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you like about
it? Leave it the way it is.
That's
my goal. You want to leave the way it's.
bidding. And as we all know, going out to public bidding is a very expensive process. It does not change the involvement of the city council. It changes the public bidding part. And it causes inflation over a period of years through the legislative determination that public bidding requirements in order to be updated for to mirror current costs, not to require bidding. You still have the same authority. This does not increase our city manager or administrator's spending.
Just you point that when they're doing purchasing manager, you know, for going through what we need, I think it still gets greater oversight at the level of that. I'm not certain that can change.
Just so you know, it doesn't change authorization.
Just to be clear, the ordinance is drafted such that the ban of staff authorization will move from 5 to 20,000 to 5 to 25,000.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So it is drafted that way.
Right.
How many years has it been 20,000?
My entire career, and I was trying to even peg that before meeting, I think it's been into the 90s. It's been touched. And just another reason to do it that didn't get put in the memo that I didn't even think of, but the purchasing manager is assuming that Oswego, which already has more liberal purchasing policies than we do, is going to do it. And so she said it would create some incongruence issues with her project.
Traders.
After executive session, no action will be taken.